Welcome back to The Trekway. I am Trev and he is Grey. I don't know which side he's on. I've got three monitors. He's somewhere around here. He's beside me. Somewhere. Hello, Grey.
Enterprise, Defiant.
We're back. We're sorry, there's been some technical difficulties, as there always is. And again, my free publicist. I can't say that word. Someone that publicizes what? Something. That's you.
Publicist.
There we go.
I'm a publicist, yes.
He does all this for free. I had some technical difficulties. I wanted to do this live because it would be on the YouTube Live and Twitch Live, but no bueno this time, so I'll try and get that fixed for next time. And we have been tweaking about how it looks on screen. It just looked a bit of a mess with the background before of the Defiant. So now we've managed to find something that's minimalist grey, but also not completely bland and boring. That's it, right. Kind of looks
have to
nice.
Cool.
Minimalist cool.
Man. We're not just techno babble around here.
I don't know techno babble. I'm sorry. I get confused with that. But yeah,
that was the whole point.
this is supposed to be the live show, but it'll still be kind of the longer discussion format that we had before.
Well, technically, we're live while we're doing it, so, kind of say it was live.
I mean, sure.
We're recorded live. There you go. We're recorded live.
As opposed to not recording live, which would be...
we'd all be dead, but then,
we're dead, Jim.
You see us, they come on and see us, and they, all of a sudden, we're both going like this.
Like Fallout, still sitting in their chairs decades later.
Yeah, exactly.
right, before we get started, of course, we are going to be talking about Discovery Season 5, Episode 4, titled Face the Strange review today, or the longer discussion format, as I like to call it now. But, of course, getting the paperwork out of the way, for those that listen to us on the audio podcast platform, we are on the YouTubes, and we've got a lot of clips coming out on TikTok and YouTube and whatnot at the moment, YouTube Shorts as well, so check them out. And for the people that watch us on YouTube, we are on audio if you want us as well. And like I say, on the TikTok, cool little clips I've been making and putting out, all the best Star Trek moments I've put out in short clips for people to swipe and enjoy, because I know our attention spans are great. I'm going to get Grey into the YouTube Shorts and the TikToks because it really is helping my channel so far. So, and then, of course, we finally done another GGR, a Grey's Green Room. Finally, it was recorded.
Finally.
We weren't dead. We were still alive. And that was out, when did we do that, Grey? Tuesday. So that is available as well at Grey's Green Room on the audio, on the YouTubes, soon to be the YouTube Shorts and the TikToks. But most importantly as well, in the description below, is the link to the Discord that we use for Grey's Green Room. He's got a room in there. The Trekway, we got a room in there as well. And it's overall a gaming-themed Discord via friend Nick, who we might be still doing a gaming podcast with. We don't know. But either way, you can jump in there and talk about all those subjects with us. And if you come in via GGR or the Trekway just now, say hi and say how you found us. That would be nice. But yeah, the key is the Discord link. That's everything's in there. So thank you. So we will crack on, get the paperwork out of the way. Without, again, spoiling it, little preview, Grey. We were close on our scores with this episode. I thought it was a bit better overall than what came before. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
I think so, except for one point, which I'll bring up. So if I'm going to put that one point to the side for the moment, I would say yes.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
and we'll see when we get there.
He's a harsh critic, Gray. He's been around the block, so you know he doesn't put up with bullshit easy. He has to be entertained, and entertained well without any silly plot holes.
I only expect near perfection, not perfection.
Yes, very true, very true. I must admit, actually, now I'm about to just glance at the bullet points that we put down for notes. I realise that the first one, when I read it back, doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. And it was starting the episode with the baddies, Maul and Lack, there, the lovers, they're back on this planet and they're meeting some guy to sell something. There's a trade, the bad guy's going to, or the trader is going to give them the item and they're handing over some latinum. Latinum's still a thing in the 32nd century, Gray. I can't believe it. Money never dies, truly. Not even in Star Trek.
I guess. You would think there might be something else, or no money at all, or I don't know, something.
Latinum. Why is latinum more precious than gold?
It could have been bottle caps.
That's true. That's true. See, it's curious that gold is not a thing in the future, you know? Yeah, well, I mean, it is, but it's not like a major currency. Like, latinum is still the thing. It must be. It is obviously valuable.
Latinum is just a Trek substitute for gold, because when they take it out, it's all shiny.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty much it. Although this looked more like platinum. Latinum. Maybe that's where they got it from. It looked silver.
Well, what was interesting, though, they did say that even though there's latinum around in the 32nd century, they said they don't usually deal that much with latin except in the black markets where they don't want a trail.
Yeah. Bitcoin. Let Bitcoin in the 32nd century. Don't want a trace. Use that.
Like diamonds, right?
Like diamonds. So they're doing a trade, but this guy, the trader, dealing with Maul and Lack, they're not. They knew something was dodgy with this guy from whatever they found out before. Yeah, you're going to trade with someone, do your research in case you get ripped off. And this guy is trying to rip them off, funnily enough. And they managed to poison the latinum. I guess it's possible. Like, as soon as the guy touched it, or I think he breathed in.
Yeah, there's poisons today where you can have surface poisons that'll do stuff, you know. But still, it is a little bit like...
Was it touch or breathing in, Gray, or a bit of both?
Touch. I think it was totally touch they were talking about.
Okay.
Because they never touched it, of course. They just handed him the bag to look at. Of course, it kind of makes you wonder if they did poison it. They must have been in a clean room or something to poison, because otherwise they would have been dead.
True.
It also makes you. And then the other thing too is, well, once he got poisoned, well, I think they took the latinum back. I don't remember, but they took the latinum back. So now what? Now they got to go clean the suckers to even use them. It's like, wow, that's kind of.
Pay someone to clean them so they might clean them just in time before they actually die. But yeah, no, this poisoned the guy. And I never really got, he obviously like dies, I never really got the point of this scene. It didn't really fit in at all with the episode for me.
I mean, the whole thing was that they wanted that piece, and I believe, even though they didn't say it, that piece was part of the puzzle that they've been collecting.
That's the point. They didn't see it. You're right, Gray. One line.
I mean, they did show it real quick, but it was like they didn't really make a big deal or even say much about it. You could easily miss it.
That's the point.
That's kind of dumb.
That's a little. I think this will tie in with why Gray was slightly peeved about some of the things that didn't make sense in this episode. And this was a small, quick thing, wasn't it? So. Mm-hmm. There we go, off to a bad start. Doesn't mean it's a bad episode, it wasn't ideal. So most of this does take place, like the vast majority of this, if not all of it, takes place on Discovery. And this is what I call, Gray, a filler episode. But it is a filler episode, and it isn't, because the budget for it, in terms of some of the special effects, it was more than just a filler episode, in my opinion. Right. Would you think this was a filler episode?
I mean, I think it was kind of like what I've been hearing some of the people say. It was more of a kind of a flashback type of episode.
Yeah.
Because they were revisiting things through the history of the series. One guy, one person said, I was reading, I don't know who it was, said that they wondered whether they knew they were going to be getting canned, and they made that episode on purpose to be a bit of a member berry kind of a thing.
That makes sense.
They did revisit. We'll mention it later, but they did revisit all these different
moments in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could believe that, but at the same time, they didn't know they were getting cancelled until, not sounding funny, they were cancelled, and then that's when they were allowed to go back and film additional scenes to make it more of a goodbye. So I'm going to not lean towards that, but I just say that for the most part, it was just a good episode in general. Now, filler episode, there wasn't a lot of pew-pew and a lot of that kind of stuff that would take a lot of your budget straight away. But there was a good flashback scenes. Now, when they used that screen behind, right? So now instead of doing a lot of CGI, back in the day, great. Well, I say back in the day, not even back in the day. Like when they were doing Voyager and all that kind of stuff onwards, they were doing. So they would have CGI for the space battles, but they would also have CGI for a lot of backgrounds, or they would manually recreate them. That costs a lot of money. So now they've got, you've maybe seen this in little background, like the Ready Room. I watched some of that. And they have the thing called the screen. It's just called the screen, right? And it's like a massive TV thing, like a massive iMac. And they can put whatever environment they want onto that. And that will save them a lot of money because they don't need to recreate every single scene and set. And that would be far too much money. It frees up more money, so that when they're spending money in CGI, this is why this. See when we get Pew Pew, it's excellent. The CGI is excellent. There's no way to say otherwise. But the one thing I'll say about that is when we have the green screen bit. Not the green screen. It's not technically the green screen. This screen behind them.
That screen.
It mostly looks great. Grey. Train that 10 times quickly.
It looks
amazing, but. We said before, I think in the first episode, there's a few moments where they don't seem to blend in with the background, the actors. Most of the time it looks fine, but like I think you said before, if there's not certain things in the background, it just doesn't look great and they don't match up. So I think my long-ass point about all that was they were saving quite a bit of money by not having pew-pew space battles. So I call it a filler episode, and it was, but there was a great story behind it as well, which I liked. But we'll crack on anyway, sorry. This is more of a Burnham Raynor redemption arc, kind of, for me, this a little bit. There's more of an understanding via Raynor and Burnham and Raynor and the crew by the end of this, which is good because I like Raynor and that was part of his whole angle, I think, Gray. Safe to say we're both Raynor fans, to be fair. And
too bad they didn't bring him aboard like 2 or 3 seasons ago.
True. Yeah, I mean,
with Saru, not dumping him, just having him, you know.
Yeah, so yeah, like Saru kind of continued being our guy at I thought it was Starfleet HQ. Apparently it's Federation HQ, so I would love to know where Starfleet HQ is. Probably in the same building, which makes zero sense for security, but you notice that, Greg? Well, we're jumping ahead slightly, but it's actually Federation HQ.
I think it would have been if this is all conjecture now because it's over. But
that's the whole point of this episode. That's fine.
Right. The whole thing, or part of the big reason that the original episode, TOS made it, because you had the big three, and you always had the big three. So you had your Spock, McCoy, and Kirk. If they had done that with this Discovery, you would have had Saru, Raynor, and Burnham. And that would have been perfect. That could have really picked up the episodes. If they had done something like that, but you know, too little, too late. But it's that's the way it goes.
They're all three of them are good actors as well. So all the stuff they've done in the past, so that easily would have worked. You're right, Greg. It's something they've missed. A track they've clearly missed. There's a little heart to heart between Burnham and Raynor at the very start because of how Raynor's talking to people on the bridge. Wasn't very nice, Greg. He's been a bit sharp and harsh, I thought. So, you know, instead of the awkward walk to the ready room, it's like, is that his rank, Commander? Commander Raynor, would you like to join me in the ready room? And they just do the old tap of the badge, and they're in the ready room. And Burnham's kind of chewing his ass a little bit, safe to say.
She gave him a good stare when she says, let's go to the ready room. She's like,
What's he thinking here? Is he thinking I'm in trouble or I've scored, Gray? She did give him a look.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was scoring at all. Yeah. Definitely in trouble or whatever.
Yeah. But it'll turn out that the fact that they've done what they've done, they teleport. I keep saying teleport around transport. Same difference, but we have to use transport.
Yeah, technically.
We have to use transport in Star Trek.
I really want to burn him to face him and just say, look, your ass was grass before I saved you.
Well, she kind of did a little bit. I mean, she was...
Yeah,
she said that if you will, yeah, exactly. I call it a professional see you next Tuesday. Gray knows what that means. There's maybe a lot of Americans that don't know what that means. It's a C word, basically, but if you spell it out, that's what I am. That's what she is. Professional. See you next Tuesday. She got her point across in a professional manner. It's an art form. It's really difficult to do. Years of training.
Yeah.
So she's literally giving him a ticking off, and he kind of accepts it at the end. He's like, right, okay, taking information on board. But then there's the ship goes a bit bonkers. That's the easiest way of saying it. It's not quite blowing up, but there's sparks and explosions and distortions, and it's all madness in the background. And they find themselves in the same wormhole that took them through to the 32nd century. It's actually Raider that went, that's a wormhole. We're in a wormhole. Glad he knows what a wormhole looks like. and funnily enough, they were. They don't see this at the time, Gray, Rayner and Burnham, but we as the audience get to see that it's the little tracker thing. The little tracker thing was listening in to Gray at the start, not that one, the other Gray.
Yeah, great character.
And then it's a tracker stroke saboteur, because it disappears into the bulkhead. That's some kind of cool technology, like blends into the bulkhead. And then it found itself down to engineering, where Stamets is. Now, Gray thought he heard this thing creeping about, and he did, but by the time he realised it was there, it was gone. But Stamets saw it. He literally saw it going past, like, while he was having some lunch, like, oh, that's nice, instead of doing something about it. You notice that? He watched it for a number of seconds instead of red alert or put a glass on it. I mean, I know that's silly.
Like a spider. Like, he was just astounded at this thing, right? Just kind of like, wow, what's that? The other thing I couldn't figure out is that the little critter thing, it looks like a spider, everybody, okay?
Yeah, it does.
How come I didn't notice Stamets was there and try to hide or blend into the metal right away?
Yes!
I'm like...
Really?
Is this because Stamets lives outside of time? Or, you know, that whole thing? Anyway.
So an excellent point, Gray.
Is this where I get to rant about the little the critter now, or should I wait?
Right, so we're almost there. Yeah, so this little thing that's a multi-tool, basically, literally what goes over to... It kind of is. It goes over to, I don't know what it was, a conduit or whatever in engineering, and then like disappears into it, and then that's when the chaos starts and explosions and everything happened and what the hell is going on. And this little bug, this little tracker, is now turned into a saboteur, is literally sabotaging the ship. And Gray's not a fan of this thing. I would love to hear why.
Okay, so for me, this little bug, I mean, it looks like a spider. And they were calling it time bug, so we'll kind of go along with that one. I've said this before about this show, and not just this show, but other shows too, but for this show, since we're Star Trek, and that's, it's back to the crutch thing again. 32nd century technology. Let's just lean on something that we can just talk about and make up and get us to where we want to go so we can finish writing. I mean, first of all, this little critter, okay, I accept the fact that there was a critter. I accept the fact that it can pass through walls. Okay, not too much, too unbelievable. But then we end up finding out that this little sucker attaches itself to something inside the engineering and basically causes all these time distortions or time, you know, waves or time, whatever the hell they're calling at these, you know, in the episode. And I'm sitting there going like, I know. I mean, come on, this little bug that was, I figured the bug was good because it was surveilling what they were doing and letting Mal and Mac, whatever they're
Mall and Lack.
Know what they're doing. So I thought, oh, that's perfect. This little critter got on. Nobody's really taking close notice. And then the next thing I know is this thing is like ultra powerful and can cause time travel waves. And the whole ship's going back to all these periods in time and la, 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 la. I'm going like, what? I'm sitting there going like, no, I don't think so at all. No. So they basically took this premise and then they went with it. It just said, we need something to get us to this point so that we can go ahead and tell our story. So let's do something totally unbelievable. And then we can just go back to being believable. Like, okay, so you have to accept this whole thing. So that just completely drove me crazy. I mean, even though, despite that, I will say that the writing was much better. The overall acting was good. Everything seemed to be blended, and that's fine. I don't have a, you know, that was great. But the way they got there was totally stupid. And that's what got me. That's just you know, it's just too much, man. Come on.
Right.
Too easy. Way too easy.
So the little bug, I can see why you would think it's a little bit far-fetched, and to an extent I possibly agree with that.
Far-fetched.
But for me, it makes a lot of sense to me, because there's a few things. It's 32nd century. That is difficult when you try to say that, Gray. Actually, I notice you stumbling, me as well. 32nd century technology. Say that 10 right. times, people, once you've had 5 pints of beer, and then we'll see how well you can do. So it's really advanced. That's why it can do all the things it does. And then later on, at some point, I don't think I'm breaking a review going forward, but later on they explain it was actually, who was it that explains it? It was Rayner, because he's from that century. It was Rayner explains what this little bug is. And he said something like a chronom time shift device. And I was thinking of that Voyager episode with a chronom device, the big ship, the year of Hell, part 1 and 2. That is two of the finest episodes of not only Voyager, but the whole of Star Trek. Brilliant, brilliant. I love it when they go nuclear in Trek. And that was fantastic. This little device is an advanced piece of technology that's supposed to do what it does. It's a very, very advanced little device. Now, in your defense, Gray, I'll say the bits that don't make sense to me. So we touched on one of them. Stamets didn't do anything about it quick enough. The bug didn't notice or care that he was there. That's weird. Yeah. Doesn't make sense. And I'm sorry, right? I know Discovery is an older ship, but it's been retrofitted to 32nd century standards.
Right.
You don't notice this thing has came on board. You can scan for pathogens that are down to the subatomic level, but you don't notice a little bug's came on board. Yeah. What?
I mean, I can go along with the fact that they didn't detect it, at least initially, enough for the critter to listen to what it needed to listen to. Yeah. And then basically they would discover it and destroy it, and that's that. But no, this thing is like some kind of super bug that basically can't be detected by anything, has amazing time travel powers and all this stuff. And even the explanation that Rayner comes up with is not an explanation. It's just a way to, again, just make it up out of thin air. Well, yeah, this thing happens all the time. We just go in all kinds of chrono problems all the time. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
You make it too easy. You can't just sit there and make time travel seem like it's just a snap. If time travel and weird shit, stuff like that happens all the time in the 32nd century, you know, or even earlier in Trek lore, what do you bother having episodes for? You could just sit there and time travel around it and just say, oh, yeah, we'll just time travel and, you know, eliminate all that. And they do it easily, like it's butter.
Well, this whole time travel thing, I was a bit hesitant as soon as I saw this, because time travel has been done a lot in Star Trek. And I'm not saying never do it again, but choose your times when to do it so that it feels not fresh, but it doesn't feel exhausting and well done, which it kind of does. Because
I mean, the original series, they only did it like 2 or 3 times,
and the whole run of
a lot of shows, so that was fine. But yeah, even in and I'm not just knocking Discovery about it. I mean, they even when you go back to even Voyager and stuff, they and a couple other things, they did it too much.
Yeah,
I mean, not as much as now. They do it like nothing now.
Yeah,
but back then, even it was getting to be a little much, and it's like, all right, come on.
It's an easy storytelling trope, though, isn't it, Gray? It's Right. It's an easy way to explain things. I think if you do the time travel thing, you've got to have... You don't use it as an excuse to cover up or be lazy. Right. You use it... Right. You have to have good writing to explain why you're doing what you're doing. And sometimes we get that in Star Trek. Sometimes we don't, though, too often. Like the one-liners or the missing one-liner. So, yeah.
I mean, the one thing that we always thought was cool in Star Trek lore was the Guardian of Forever, right? So the Guardian of Forever was one of the only entities that you could actually time travel with. But he also knew that there was ways that you could correct things and bring things back to normal. It had its own power. So even in the books, and I didn't read a lot of the books, okay, but even in the Star Trek books that followed, when they talked about the Guardian, it was something that was not, you know, that was protected, that even the Guardian said in a Discovery episode that he didn't want everybody to be using it. So we kept moving around and stuff like that. So it was something that was difficult, very difficult to do. Not an easy thing whatsoever. To time travel is extremely difficult, extremely
dangerous,
blah, blah, blah. And here comes this bug that does it just...
Great. It is 32nd century technology, man. It's 1,000 years. You cannot even think slightly it might be feasible. If they explain how it's done, maybe a bit better. No, all right, okay.
It would have to be a darn good plausible explanation. I mean, and you would have to, and that's the point I'm making. The writers didn't even bother thinking about it. They just plopped it in there and said, they'll accept this garbage, and we can write what we want after that. And then that's what they did. And it's not to say that some of the writing wasn't good. It was.
Yeah.
But the premise to be able to write that stuff was based on stupid things. That's my point.
Fair enough.
So you don't see that kind of garbage in The Expanse. The Expanse went five or six seasons without ever getting into weird stuff like that. And it was an absolute wonderful, show.
Gray did warn us it would be a rant, to be fair. So listen, people, you can't complain. He did warn you ahead of time it was going to be a rant.
Yep.
And I agree with a lot of what Gray says. I agree with some of his points he just made there, but not all of them. But hey, thank God we still live in democracy. Right, so this is time travel. So it's this little device literally can make you, or the ship, go forwards in time on its where it's sitting right now in time and space, and it literally holds you in that spot until the juice runs out of the little device, by which time the person who set the trap gets what they want, and or you're dead because you've been there for ages. You know, these things probably are good. The power supplies that last a while, so they are still time traveling, and now they switch to. While Rayner and Burnham are still in the ready room, they travel back to, and it's Burnham that recognizes this, not Rayner. They time travel back, and the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge is in the background. Part of, as we all know, as Trekkies, that's the most famous bridge in the universe, and that's sitting there in the background. And she smiles. She recognizes what that is. There's a guy at the side just casually, like a construction worker on the ship, working on it as it's getting made, and he's like, I thought the inspection wasn't for another week or something, and she went, surprise, you're doing a great job.
That's right, keep it up.
But then she explains to him, she's like, yeah, this is literally the dry dock at San Francisco, the dry, whatever it's called, well, I don't know what they call it, San Francisco dry dock.
Right.
Now, there's an interesting thought, Gray, that I was... There was a stage where ships, and we're seeing it more now, starships, at least to some extent, were built on Earth, right? We've seen it in the Kelvin universe, which, okay, you shouldn't really technically count because it's Kelvin, but it's set back in the day. You see it with Discovery. You even see it later on. So they must do it later on at some points with... The Voyager A, that was literally came out of a hangar. Animated Jamie walked up to it. It's a bloody hangar. It didn't look like a dry dock. It looked like a hangar. She opens this hangar and there's Voyager A sitting in there. So they do make ships sometimes there. But it kind of doesn't make sense because, as we know, it's far, far more efficient to make these things in space. And I'm not comparing it to now, Gray, where... It costs a shit ton of money to get anything into space just now. This is why SpaceX rocket is brilliant, because they're taking down the how much it takes to get into space, and they're taking that cost down dramatically. But even still, in hundreds of years from now, 1,000 years from now, it still costs a lot more energy and effort to get things into space. So, but why do we still have dry docks, man? What?
Well, right or wrong, the Star Trek lore was that the Enterprise, the original Enterprise from the TOS series, was built on the ground. And when they did the stupid Kelvin timeline and they were building the Enterprise, it was on the ground. And then it all changed when they refitted the Enterprise 1701 and the 1701A, and everything was space dock. So essentially, it's a space dry dock that came around afterwards. But until then, apparently, they were still making them on the Earth for whatever reason.
I didn't know
that. So I think.
Sorry, carry on.
No, I was saying, so to stick to lore, the Discovery would have been built on the ground because it was in the era of the original Enterprise.
Were they all built on the ground at that time?
That's the way they explained it, yes.
But I didn't know because that about the original Enterprise.
Well, because nobody really thought about building it in space. They just went along with the normal thing that we've all been doing, and that's been building the ships in dry dock, and that's it, you know, and then you launch out. But I don't think anybody truly thought about building in space at the time, so they just went with it. Then when they finally got to the movies, they started going like, well, all right, now we can introduce
more cinematic
docks, you know.
I didn't know that about the original Enterprise being built on Earth, like the Prime Universe. I didn't know that, actually. There you go. I've learned something new today, which is nice. I don't often learn new things about Trek, but I did today. That's kind of cool. There is a downside to that. It's called physics. Building ships that massive. I mean, these things are... I would love to... There is a guy on YouTube, I don't recall his name, who compares... not just starships, but sci-fi ships in general to real things in the world and in the solar system. Yeah, relative size guy. I can't remember his name, but he's excellent. Just go and Google that. And even the smallest ship, even the Defiant or something, would be bloody huge if it was out in the street. Absolutely ginormous. So then when you add, maybe Defiant's a bad example because it's a compact device, but the original Enterprise... the pylons were in the cells. The thin neck. That thin neck, man. Oh, my God. That was always such a design flaw for me in the Enterprise, I'm telling you. And it got found out on more than one occasion. That neck, all these things, especially the pylons, all that weight on top of them under gravity. Yes, I know they've got more advanced materials, Gray. I know that. But even still, that's got to be a strain. And then when you... the amount of power, even in that, in hundreds of years from now, to take off from the ground, it's still a shit ton of power. So it kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but meh. Just that's why we do these episodes, so we can moan for an hour, complain. But anyway, so yes, they are back in dry dock. Burnham smiles about this because she remembers this. She was around about this time, so she's happy about that. Now, the question is, Gray, why were Rayner and Burnham not affected by this time jumping? Because at one point they go to go into the bridge, and when they're going through the wormhole, they see everyone lying on the bridge, not dead but knocked out because it was a traumatic experience, and they go back into the ready room to take a stock of what happened. So why were those two not affected by what's going on
In the episode? And I'm not recalling it in 100%.
I know the answer, by the way. It's hypothetical, but you can tell me.
I'm just saying, in the episode, they explained something. It had something to do with the fact that they were transported when they went to transport themselves to the ready room. At the exact moment they went to transport, this first little time jump happened.
That's convenient. That's convenient.
And all of a sudden, I know. And then all of a sudden, they weren't affected because of it, because of technobabble, blah, blah, blah. And... which is another bit of a unbelievable part, but I can go along with that one. I just can't go along with Bug being able to do everything.
You had a little run after as well.
The funny thing was when they talked about Stamets, they said, "Well, Stamets exists out of time or besides time or something like that." I'm like,
"We'll explain that when we get to that bit. We're jumping ahead."
Yeah. So then it just okay. We'll work with that.
It does make sense why the way he is to be preferred. No, you had wasn't a rant, actually. You talk about the story being pretty good once you get past the premise of the time bug, almost like Groundhog Day, which it kind of is. So How would you improve that then, Greg? Would you take away the time? What would you replace the time bug with to make it make sense?
Well, I'd have to give it some thought, and I'm not an expert writer, but my feeling is that if they're gonna use time as the premise for the story,
yeah,
they gotta come up with a better explanation than a stupid bug that can do everything. I mean, so if they
bug.
Were able to come up, yeah, right. But if they were able to come up with some, at least somewhat logical, acceptable premise,
yep,
I probably would have gone along with it. But it was just too simple. It's just like, yeah, throw this bug, and this bug can do all the stuff. I'm going, are you kidding me? This bug just automatically starts causing things to jump in time. Sure, that's everybody has one of those. I got a bug in my back pocket. I can do that too.
I'd go to the doctor. Like, I'd go to the doctors about that. Great, that isn't a bug.
Exactly. So assuming that they could come up with a very plausible explanation, it would have made the episode so much easier to believe, and or they would have had to come up with a whole different premise to do an episode like that. But really, to make the kind of flashbacks that they wanted, unfortunately, they almost had to go time travel, because how else are you going to get the flashbacks unless you're in the hollow room? Which, to be honest, could have been something that they could have maybe worked with, done in a very large hollow room. I mean, they turned their entire cabins that they stay in, they're into hollow rooms. You noticed that, right?
Yeah, that's cool, actually.
Yeah, so why couldn't you just make one big-ass room into a big hologram and basically relive a lot of things that happened that way, maybe. But anyway, that's just, you know.
We're allowed to nitpick, man. That's the whole point of this this longer discussion review. At one point, I haven't noted this down, but at one point they do figure out what's happened in terms of the speed between the jumps. What did they call that? It was like a cone shape.
Like an hourglass.
Like an hourglass, and it was like the vortex is going down and the vortex is going back up, and they kind of meet in the middle. And so they can figure out exactly. It was Zora, the ship's computer, that helps them figure this one out. They can tell when the next jump's going to happen, so they know how long they've got. But again, they're still continuing their jumps through time. And they're now back at the fight with Control. Now, this was the start of the slow improvement of Discovery, this whole back in the day when they had to fight with Control, because we knew season one they made an arse of things. They tried to repair it in season two, but season two, it would take them the whole season to build up the recovery and how they would get them to the future and start fixing things. And that ended with a great fight at the end. Did you like the fight when you saw that first time round, Grey, with Control? I thought that was cool. Two massive starships fighting off a lot. It seemed like their odds were against them, but then they've done something that I've hardly or never seen in Star Trek, where the ships could, tiny little bits could come off them, especially the control ships, and fight as a big force. I've never seen Enterprise and Discovery with so many things that could fight, little dots and shuttles and stuff. Did you enjoy that whole fight when you saw it?
Yeah, I thought it was different. I mean, in Star Trek lore, the only ship that could kind of do that was, I can't remember the class.
Prometheus?
I think so. And it was in Star Trek Online. It broke into three different pieces.
Yeah, no, that started in Discovery. Did it a Voyager, remember? When Doctor went back to Alpha Quadrant, yeah.
And even though nobody really remembers it much, all the Enterprises and other ships were always able to separate from Saucer. And they both were able to fight on their own. They rarely ever used that, but it was there. Yeah, of course. Well, especially with the original series, they're going like, you can split the Saucer off. And they're going like, no, we're not.
No, hell no.
It's hard enough to do the effects now. We're not doing that.
we need two drunk guys to fly the bits separately if we'd done that in two models. No, that's not going to work.
Well, first of all, the more logical thing, and they even knew it back in the original series, was that you would have what? Fighter groups.
Yeah.
Every ship has to have support and fighter groups. Well, that didn't happen until later when they could afford it, because back then it just was too mind-boggling and not going to work.
I never thought that was a Star Trek thing. I thought we moved past that. Star Trek wasn't about that. But you're right. It's probably just because of budget reasons that we never had this.
Yeah, because logically, if your ship's being attacked, you don't want to have to bring your ship. Your ship is not going to be as maneuverable as a smaller ship. So technically, you would want some kind of nimble fighters to help out when needed.
Yeah.
But they, again, too expensive, so they didn't do it. You know, then later, things like that were more plausible.
Yeah. It's when I saw that original fight, I thought that was cool because the Discovery and the Enterprise didn't do this. But the control ships were unique because it was, the whole thing was AI, and it was just materials to be manipulated by AI. The whole ship seemed to come apart into tiny little pieces short of the main hull itself. Little bits would break off the hull and be individual fighters. I thought that was cool. But yeah, they're back in that fight again. You see the explosions outside the window. And that's where Raynor, he then clocks onto what this is because he's seen it before, the little time device. It's a time bubble, essentially. This little device, the little multi-tool, the little spider thing, Grey, you didn't like it before, but this makes it a little bit more sense to me. This, the design of this little bug and how it ties in with the systems generates this little time bubble. But the thing is, right, you would think, oh, that's not believable because of the amount of power it takes. You would think it would take the power from the ship, but no, it uses its own power supply. That's the bit I find batshit crazy, because that's how they get out of this. They either solve the problem or they wait for the little device to run out of juice, and it's Maul and Lack that have set this device so they can get ahead of Discovery and get the next part of the clue. It's not to kill them all necessarily, it's just so they can be held in a little spot for a while.
To delay them and stuff.
Yeah, so it makes total sense in that respect to me. Another time jump again, you'll be surprised to hear, and it's the Emerald Chain attack. I know. I can't remember, would this be season... No. Season 3? I can't... No. Can't remember season 1. Anyway, it was the Emerald Chain attack. What they do, this bit's cool, they hide themselves in the sensors, because at this time... No, it is the third season, because Zora is the current computer, she's the super-duper souped-up AI ship, and she would be able to know they're there compared to, say, a standard Starship computer that wouldn't know that, but she's super intelligent, she would know they're there. So it was actually Raynor's idea to hide them from it, to which Burnham says that's a great plan, and she types in her captain's code that hides her biometrics. See, that's a little... Great, that's a little line of writing that easily could have been missed, and it's been things that have been missed by Trek writers in the past, but I'm glad they put that in, because at some point the audience, especially you and I, would go, wait a minute, why is this super duper computer not, surely no one would know it's there. So right. Credit where credit's due for actually doing something right. We need to give them credit where credit's due, because often we slag them when it's bad, so, you know.
Which we did. And that was a beast. That was the good part side of it, as opposed to the lazy side of it,
which we did and we will continue to do. But yeah, I feel like we need to say when things are good more as well. Think Gray and looking at the bright side. So yeah, they hide themselves from Zora so that Zora can't see them.
I wonder if Zora knows who Cortana is.
You want to cross over the franchises, man, and cause a big black hole or something, aren't you? Well, saying that, right, I don't want to go on a massive tangent with this one on purpose. I'll tell you the coolest crossover I have ever... Well, I've read it. I've not actually... It's never been on the screen, unfortunately, so it's not officially canon. Is Star Trek and Doctor Who. They crossed over in a comic, which was absolutely excellent. And I won't bore you to tears with this. Go and find it for yourself. But essentially, I think the Doctor can cross between dimensions. He literally crosses dimensions and lands on Enterprise D. And Picard's like, what the actual hell? And you know the Doctor's batshit crazy anyway. So he's like, what the hell is going on? They actually combine forces in the end because the Cybermen are coming through. They're coming across. And there's the Borg on the Star Trek side. And they're combining together, the Borg and the Cybermen, and they've got to join forces to fight them. It was a fascinating concept, Gray, and if you ever can dig out the comic, man, recommend it. It's very, very entertaining. And I don't read comics, but anyway. I'm not going to slag comic, because there are a lot of people that will watch this that like comic books. It's just, it's pictures for the most part. I wouldn't, not for me.
I did it for 50 years until the writing got so bad I stopped.
Well, he's had enough. So yeah, more time jumping. This time, this is one of the cooler parts. A time jump into the future. I thought they were only going back the way, but no, they're going forwards as well. And looks like Discovery is on its last legs. It just looks knackered, to use a good British word. It just looks tired and exhausted. There's cobwebs everywhere. There's like no juice in any of the... They're not L-card displays anymore, are they? But the interface consoles that they use. And they go onto the bridge and nothing's there. They hear some music just gently playing in the background. And there's like blast doors in front of the view screen, which I didn't know there was blast doors in front of the Discovery view screen, but there you go, there is. And Zora speaks to them, and I thought this was pretty cool, this bit. She tells them what's happened. They have travelled in the future. This time bug thing basically done them in. They couldn't escape in time. Mal and Lack sold the device to the Breen, and the Breen came over to where they opened the shutters at this stage of blast shutters, and they see Federation HQ smashed up into smithereens in bits, and it was basically too late. There's nothing they could do about that. Why do you not like this time traveling bugs thing of getting into the future, Gray? You note that here. I'm curious,
because there was a part, I'd have to go back and see it again to make sure. Maybe I was mistaken, but I think it was Rayner, if I remember right. It could have been Stamets too, and they specifically said that the time bug was caused them to relive their experiences.
Yeah.
So you can't go in the future because you're not reliving your experiences. You haven't experienced it yet. So I'm sitting there going like, so why are they in the future? Not saying it wasn't cool. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. I get it. But the whole premise was not that. You're reliving your experiences. So it's dropping you into the past to disorient you crazy by reliving the experiences you went through. And if you noticed, everything they went through, Burnham connected to all of it because it was reliving her experiences. Well, she never experienced the future. So how do you relive your experiences if you didn't go to the future like that?
True.
So that just got me kind of going. And I'm like, huh? Again, if I'm going to overlook that, and I'm really overlooking a lot, but if I do overlook it, it was still cool. It's just that the way they got there made no sense.
Yeah,
but it was cool.
I listen. It's not breaking or ruining anything for me. But Gray's got a point. They could have explained. They could have not mentioned that part in the first place, and then this would have made sense. If they just explained it was a time traveling device, then it's free for all, forwards, backwards, doesn't matter. You're right, Gray. It's a good point. Zora she's a couple of the lithium crystals short of a warp core. She's not had anyone to speak to for 30 years. She asks if Burnham's actually real. Are you there? Yes, I'm actually here, Zora, I'm real. Tell me what happened. And that's what she explained. And it's the Breen again, man. Like, they've been mentioned a couple of times in this. I really hope we get to see them again properly, because I loved them in Deep Space Nine. We've barely heard or seen from them since. They were good bad guys. I would love to see them more. So essentially, they've got the progenitor tech, or at least they've been sold it or an element of it. All the Discovery crew has died. I don't recall if she said how they died, but they're dead anyway, so game over. It was a little bit, I think it was a, I won't say awe-inspiring, but it shocks you a little bit when you see Federation HQ just smashed up like that, because I mean that's the heart, the center of the Federation, and it's literally been decimated. So that means it got through all the defenses and all the starships that were supposed to be out, because remember, the starships power the Federation HQ, if you recall from the start. So how it managed to bust this thing up is actually beyond me, but anyway, it does.
Specifically blame the progenitor tech for it all.
Well, yeah,
because we don't know what it does, so
we don't yet.
It's not that powerful.
We kind of know what it does, but not in any detail. It was very vague, wasn't it? Stamps gave you the highlights. We should have... I've got it noted down at this stage here, but Gray did touch on it briefly before. Stamets is involved in this with these two, but not until but halfway through the episode. He is immune to the effects of it. Now, this makes sense to me, although maybe far-fetched, but it makes sense to me, because of the... He has a little bit of tardigrade DNA in him. That's how he's able to control the ship at Black Alert for the spore jumps. Instead of using the tardigrades, which they couldn't do, it was inhumane, he volunteers to be the guinea pig, and this is why the whole spore drive thing shutting down. It wasn't very... I mean, using a person with DNA to control the ship, it doesn't really make sense.
Isn't practical enough.
And it doesn't sound very Star Trek-like, so... They're getting rid of that, but he—that's the reason, Gray. The tardigrades kind of—I don't know if they live outside time and space normally, but they certainly they feel it, or they're different to the effects of it, and that's where Stamets comes in. And it was Burnham that said that before they even met up. She'd be like, "I bet you Stamets will be okay. We need to find him. He won't be affected by this." That's a handy skill set to have. Imagine putting that on your Starfleet CV: immune to the effects of time travel. Cool.
The thing that I thought was funny is when she was explaining all this, he's explaining it to Rayner, and when she got to the part about Stamets, you know, living, you know, besides time or whatever, he just goes like,
"He's like what? He's like now. What? He was like you. He was like you. Your same reaction.
Exactly.
What?
Exactly." And then she was just going, "Yeah, long story. We'll talk about
long
it another time."
Story. he should know that though. This is why you should get to know the crew better, because then you would bloody know that, wouldn't you?
He just got on board, so.
But Zora basically tells him, she says, "Listen, we were stuck in this time bubble thing for so long that we were busted up, and by the time someone could come and rescue us, pretty much all the damage had been done, and Federation HQ is busted up." So, yeah, Stamets, they literally have to build a device. They have to build a little device that's going to counter the effects of this little goddamn bug. There always is. There's always devices.
And you know what? I don't even have a problem with the device. I have a problem that this little device is the same as the bug. It can go like, it can do anything to this bug. No problem.
God, Gray, you're such a hard man to please.
You know, but that part I could accept more than I could accept the bug premise to begin with. But, you know, but anyway.
In engineering, Stamets tells everyone to leave. You know, he's very... Yeah. I like the actor, right? He plays him a bit of a arsehole, to be honest with you, and I like that. He's like, "Listen, everyone leave, otherwise mushrooms will start growing in your lungs. There's been a leakage here, you know, get out. Which was pretty cool. We both liked that, Gray and I.
They all fell for it and they're leaving.
They died like, "No way, I'm getting out of here. No way, not mushrooms again." It's all a ruse, of course. Stamets had to make the room clear for Burnham and Rayner to appear. And need to start building this little device that Stamets is talking about that will get them out of Dodge. Problem is, one of the key components is in Burnham's quarters. She has her own holodeck on her own quarters, which makes sense. It is the 32nd century technology. Why shouldn't the captain have her own little mini holodeck? And she does. She needs to go there and get a device. Was it Rayner said volunteered to go and get it, but she said no, I need to get it. The captain's quarters are biometrically sealed. Makes sense to me. You can't have your number one going in and just grabbing shit from the captain's quarters whenever you want. And she does. It goes smoothly for a while, Grace. She is heading towards the quarters, no problem. Gets in there, grabs the device. But before she does that, we find out... Actually, no, I'm getting myself muddled up here. She encounters Book, which was a little bit awkward. She was very on mission, on point. And listen, I'm a straight lad, but... David Dijala, or whatever his name is, the guy works out, he looks good. She's like, "All right, hey, Book," you know, and then he's like, "What's going on?" And this has been the past when they're still together and they haven't had the fallout, and he whips off his shirt. And she's a professional. She's a captain, she's a professional, but she's a little bit distracted. I mean, it's understandable. Let's say the guy works out, looks good. She's like, God damn it. Don't have time for this. You could just see the expression on her face.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, Gray, they've still had that falling out in Burnham's mind. So he's trying to play lovey-dovey and he grabs her and he gives her a kiss and says, I love you. And she's just like, I love you too.
Yeah, I love you too. That's nice.
Go away now. So that was good. That was good.
I'm going to go take care of a bug. Leave me alone.
I'm going to take care of a bug. I'm not talking about you, Book. So yeah, they get the device up and running. But the problem is they can't get past its defences. They do try to get past its defences, but when they throw in like a spanner or a wrench, it automatically turns to dust because I thought this was cool, and I want your opinion on this, Gray, mm-hmm. if you think it's far-fetched or not. It turns to dust because the shielding around it is out of phase with time itself, so it's pulsing at a different kind of beat that essentially anything that touches it is aged so quickly, that's why it turns to dust. So I like that defense mechanism, an element to it. Did you like that, or do you think, I hate this? Yeah?
No, I didn't hate it. I thought the concept was cool. I liked the whole bit about that. So again, I'm not faulting the fact that I didn't like it, not faulting the fact that it was kind of cool writing. I'm only faulting the fact that it never should have been completely, except that if they come up with a better explanation. But again, accepting of that, even though it is stupid, is that yes, what they wrote was pretty cool. In fact, even when he put his hand went in there with the gizmo that Stamets made.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking like, wow, when he puts his hand in there, does that mean his hand's gonna grow really old?
Yeah, well, I think he was holding something and whatever he was holding turn into dust? Because his hand should have aged.
Well, the gizmo did whatever it was supposed to do. I don't know if it turned into dust, but his hand was hurt. It looked like it was kind of bruised up and burnt or something like that. But okay. I just kept on thinking, oh man, if he sticks his hand there, what happens if his hand turns to dust? And he's got like, oops.
No hand. No, I wonder if it'd be his hand or his whole body, actually. That's a good point.
Yeah, I personally would have done it. I think it would have been cool because he would have had him do that. The gizmo would work, but at the cost of his hand.
No, the gizmo would have turned to dust. It wouldn't have
worked. Right. No. I'm saying that gradually that would have happened. Like, in other words, the gizmo did its job.
Okay.
But at the same time, when it was done doing its job, it turned to dust. His hand turns to dust, but he still lives. And they could have, you know, replaced his hand with new technology, et cetera.
Give him a fake hand. Yes, definitely. Why not?
Pathetic. And make it a different color than the rest of them.
So they have a plan to bypass the defense, which this, I like this. This is where you get a bit nerdy and techno babble, but it kind of makes sense if you're a diehard Trekkie like Gray and I. So the way to break this little shielding of it, because it's out of phase of time and whatnot, is they need to go to warp. The Discovery has to go to warp. I mean, has anyone done maintenance on the warp nacelle? Did even check its work? They haven't used it in so long. They might be blowing fumes. It might not work.
Yeah, it might be, you know.
Does warp drive still work in the Discovery? Who knows?
Yeah, I never used it, so how do they know?
I like to see what. I know it's old-fashioned. Listen, I know they need to progress the... This is 1,000 years in the future. We need better, more efficient, alternative ways of travel. I know we do. Warp has to be progressed at some point, but I like it. And what they're doing now in this series is they're saying that there are other versions available, but we don't get to see them. I don't know if that's a cop-out, Gray, if I like that or I don't like it, but I would like to see other forms of propulsion that make sense. Yeah. Just saying. Slipstream or something, I don't know. But yeah, so they have to go to warp, but what they have to do is deactivate the safeties, essentially, and break the warp bubble, because the warp bubble is actually what stops them. This is based in physics. This is where Star Trek, back in the day, made sense. They had scientists involved in the writing to make sure it made sense. They don't do that as much as they used to. And basically, if you go to light speed for a while, say you're traveling to another galaxy and you come back, your loved ones are probably going to be dead because you perceive time differently from them and vice versa. So this is how Star Trek explains it. The warp bubble help mitigates this so that you don't age differently. They need to break that so that they're slightly out of phase, and therefore the bug with its little shielding device is out of phase. Now, as Lorca says, wouldn't we be like insects on the windscreen? Yeah, we potentially would be, but that's what the inertial dampeners are for, and they have to be turned up to max and fine-tuned to explain. They should, in theory, still protect them, and they do. But that's their plan. Executing this plan is obviously a lot more difficult than it seems. Burnham, there's another time jump. Burnham, en route, bumps into herself. She literally, her younger self, goes into the turbo lift. And this is the time of Captain Lorca. Yeah, so they go back in time with this one. She bumps into herself. And if you see my short review that I done yesterday, I put a thumbnail on of the two Burnhams up against each other. And she literally has to kick her own arse. She literally does. She says, listen, we know, you know me, I know you. Listen, I'm from the future. Honestly, you need to let me carry on and do my job. Otherwise, it's game over. She doesn't buy it. This is the mutinous Burnham that's trying to get back on the good side of everyone on board. And they have a good fight. But you see, Gray, they're cancelling each other out because they know each other's moves, which is cool. But you think a Captain Burnham with a bit more experience would have some more moves that younger Burnham didn't, but she didn't. They were cancelling each other out. So what did Burnham do? She went, ah, screw this, gave her a Vulcan nerve pinch. Now, do we like this scene? Do we not like this scene, Gray? What?
No, it was fine. It was fine. I was being sarcastic in my notes. Yeah. I go, wait, can she be Spock's sister? No way.
I thought it was only Vulcans that could do it, though. No?
I thought they said something...
you just need to be trained properly.
Deja vu now, but I thought if I remembered something in the original series that I don't know if it was McCoy or somebody asked Spock about that, if he could teach that. He said something to the effect that I could, but it's like really difficult, you know, to and stuff. So supposedly it took time to master and it wasn't an easy thing to do. So yeah, they weren't making a reach in this. She could have done that and she did.
Well, yeah, like, I think this is cool. In fact, we don't like the whole thing that she's Spock's sister anyway. Both Gray and I both hated that. There was never any need to add it in. It didn't improve the story. Yeah. But that's a whole different rant we've done before. But they may as well use what they've got at the moment. And yeah, it does make sense. She was brought up from a young age along with Spock that she knows a lot of the Vulcan ways of doing things. So she should know how to do that. And we don't see it enough, actually. Maybe that's a good thing, Gray. Mm-hmm. Let's not overuse that. She used it when she really had to, which I like. Now, there is a little sweet moment between Rayner and Stamets. Basically just a bit of a heart-to-heart because he realises he's been a bit harsh on him. He thinks Stamets doesn't like being under pressure, basically. Mm-hmm. And Rayner literally just calms him down a little bit and tells him to take a breath and you can do this, you're excellent, blah, blah, blah. I like that. The redemption arc for Rayner Gray, slowly but surely. So he's going to fit into the crew. And then probably one of the best bits of the episode for me was when Burnham goes to the bridge. Now, she has to convince everyone on the bridge, this is the older crew, to help her out. And she's going to walk on their future Burnham, like no one's going to believe her. Maybe she's going to have to gas everyone, knock them out, Gray. Maybe she's going to have to do a bit of sabotage herself. No, she literally just she just convinces them. She says she knows them, and she does. She's like, I know this about you, and I know that about you, and blah, blah, blah. And they're a bit confrontational with her. But we have one of the officers back that I'd forgotten about, and it's a shame that I did. Arium, the human cyborg, who was key in season 2, she sacrificed herself to help the Discovery crew. She manages to convince Arium that, listen, if anyone knows me, it's Arium that knows me. And Arium actually accepts her explanation and doesn't offer, and they agree to go to warp to try and stop this thing. But this younger Burnham, she's just been left nerve pinched in a corridor, has got up. Yeah. And yeah, you notice that. It's like you've nerve pinched her, but you didn't lock her up. Maybe you didn't have time.
We can kind of go away with that one.
We can bypass it, can't we?
She
goes down to engineering. And she has got a phaser on Stamets and Rayner. and it's a whole convincing thing. Rainer then redeems himself a little bit because he gets Bernal to stand down, which is excellent. You know, it's just it's not fighting. It's just good writing and using your words to try and de-escalate a situation rather than pew-pew. And then they're about to run out of time, just in the nick of time. They pull it off. They go to warp, come out of warp really quickly. It's enough to bypass the little bug to get the device on it. And then they pull it off just in the nick of time. And Rainer, I think Rainer and Burnham, safe to say, by the end of this episode, Grey, have a lot more of an understanding, especially when Rainer says, I can never remember the name of some of the other bridge crew. And I think we've discussed this before, Grey, that that's because the writing of Discovery doesn't focus enough on these other bridge characters. So that's why you and I, as the viewer...
Except for Tilly, who comments like, oh, I love that outfit you have on.
Yeah, I know. It's, I can't remember his name. He's the... I think he's the comms officer. And Rainer says something really nice to him after saying something nasty before. And that's a really nice moment where you can see a look between Burnham and Rainer, like, thank you. They're more accepting of one another in the situation. So they save the time. They don't have a piece of the clue. There were five or six pieces of the clue, Gray, of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Five?
Right.
So
there's, I think five or six. Something.
There's eight episodes, so they have to have two or three filler episodes regardless. So yeah, it was a decent episode, Gray. What did you give it out of 10 and why?
I went 7 out of 10. I if it wasn't for the stupid time bug, I would have went 8 out of 10. but because that I just found it impossible to get past that, I kept it at 7 out of 10.
Fair enough. I'm close to grade score-wise. I usually am. I gave this an 8 out of 10. The time bug doesn't upset me as much as it upsets Gray, although I said before, I agree with some of his points. Some of them didn't make any sense with the writing in the episode. And the writing has to usually be... The writing has never been as great on Discovery as it has been in other Star Trek shows. So, 8 out of 10 for me. I just think it's a better overall episode than previous episodes. A better story. And good character development because... We actually see a bit more between Burnham and Rainer and the rest of the crew, and Rainer and Burnham. And in fact, I'm even tempted to move that up to an 8.5 just because we see warp drive and Discovery again, Cray. I'm just like, I didn't think.
Yeah, then the bug knocks it back down to 8.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. So say it then, right? Okay. It's the correct score after all. So yeah, guys. We'll wrap it up there. Like I say, this is the usual format that Gray and I do. The longer for discussion where we go into tangents, which we're famous for doing, and it lasts longer, but I always do a quicker, shorter review where I don't go off in tangents, which is usually available in the day of, so it's already available, and I'll attach it to the end of this video, just 10 minutes long. So we'll wrap up there, Gray. Thank you again, my man. We might be back again, or at least I will be possibly on Sunday for some more live gameplay of Star Trek Resurgence. But until then, Mr. Gray, do you want to say goodbye to people, please, mate?
Live long and prosper, everybody.
Bye-bye.